This is Nachyomi, Sefer Melachim Aleph, chapter 10. The queen of Sheba, or Sheba, has heard of the reputation of Shlomo and his kingdom and arrives with a delegation of officers to investigate. She challenges Shlomo with riddles and questions, and he is able to answer them all. She is furthermore impressed by the opulence of the king, his wealth, the beauty of the temple and the palace, the extravagance of the king's court and servants, the abundant meals served on his table, and the worship of God that he performs in the Beit HaMikdash. The queen of Sheba's breath is taken away by what she observes, which is far beyond what she had expected to witness based on the reports she had received. She praises the officers in attendance of Shlomo, who are so fortunate to have the opportunity to hear his wisdom on a regular basis, and she blesses Hashem, the God of Israel, for having chosen such a wise and just monarch to rule over his people. The queen bestows lavish gifts of gold and spices upon Shlomo, and the king returns the favor by providing her with any knowledge she seeks, as well as sharing with her from his royal bounty. The queen then departs for home. The boats of Hiram not only bring gold back to Shlomo from Ophir, they also carry exquisite wood and precious gems back from their journeys. King Shlomo uses the wood to fashion pillars for the Beit HaMikdash and for his palace, as well as to make instruments for the musical accompaniment of the temple service. Shlomo amasses a tremendous amount of gold on an annual basis, both from the taxes he levies on the people and from the exploits of his navy. Shlomo uses this excess gold to design heavy, solid gold decorative shields and targets that adorn the House of the Forest of Lebanon. He also overlays his ivory throne with gold and constructs six steps leading up to it. On either side of each step is an ivory lion covered in gold, for a total of 12 lions. No other king in the world could boast of such an exceptional throne. All of the vessels used in the palace and in the House of the Forest of Lebanon were made of gold. Silver was considered worthless during this period of time. In addition to precious metals and stones, Shlomo's navy would arrive every 3 years with rare animals like peacocks and monkeys as well. There was such an abundance of fine goods in Israel at this time that items like silver and cedar wood became commonplace. Shlomo surpassed all of the kings in the land in both material wealth and wisdom. People would come from all over the world to hear his wisdom, bringing gifts of gold, silver, garments, armor, animals, and so on to the king as a tribute. Shlomo accumulated many chariots and horses, purchasing them from Egypt at a hefty price. In this chapter, we see both sides of the tension in Shlomo, here exemplified, exacerbated, and interwoven with one another. The account of the visit of the queen of Sheba, or Malkat Sheva, is historic because it describes the fulfillment of the whole purpose of the Torah. The objective of all the commandments is that the Jewish people sanctify the name of God in the world, inspiring the Gentiles to inquire about and acknowledge his existence. Our patriarch Abraham dedicated his life to this cause, and we are obligated to perpetuate his legacy. When the prophets speak of the Messianic era, they portray the nations of the world streaming to Jerusalem to learn of the ways of God from the Jewish people. During the times of Yahushua, we remember that the Givonim pretended to be emissaries from a faraway land who had learned of the great deeds of Hashem and wished to accept his kingship and join the Jewish people. In reality, they were local Kanaanim who feared for their lives. Yahushua and the elders were so excited by the thought that they had accomplished their mission of spreading awareness of Hashem across the globe that they hastily accepted the story of the Givonim and welcomed them. The case of the queen of Sheba, however, is the real deal. Motivated by sincere curiosity and interest, she has come to learn more about the God of Israel and his wisdom. In this sense, she is a latter-day Yitro, like the Midianite father-in-law of Moshe. She left the comfort of her homeland to investigate the reports she had heard about the wisdom of Hashem and his providence. Yitro likewise heard about what Hashem had done in Egypt and came to find out more. Like Yitro, she has an even further epiphany once she witnesses the greatness of the Torah and the people of God with her own eyes, and is even more impressed than she had expected to be. She praises not only the wisdom of Shlomo, but the one God of Israel, and recognizes that Shlomo has been chosen to implement tzedakah u'mishpat, justice and charity. The use of these words, tzedakah and mishpat, charity and justice, is critical because they refer us back to at least two fundamental biblical characters. King David, David HaMelech, was described at the height of his career as doing tzedakah and mishpat for his people. As the founder of the monarchy, this example establishes the ideal to be emulated by all future kings. More essentially, though, tzedakah u'mishpat, charity and justice, are the terms Hashem uses to describe the way of life of Abraham and his life's work. They define the core values of Judaism, really. Shlomo's kingdom functioned in such a wise, judicious, equitable, and charitable manner that the queen of Sheba was able to perceive exactly what Judaism and the God of Israel are all about. In this way, too, she is similar to Yitro, who recognized Hashem because of the justice of his actions in punishing the Egyptian oppressors and saving the persecuted Jews. At the same time, we find Shlomo accumulating excessive wealth, contrary to the laws of the Torah, indulging in luxury and extravagance beyond measure, and transgressing the prohibition of acquiring many horses. The Torah explicitly forbids the king to have a multitude of horses, so he won't go to Egypt to acquire them. And this is, in fact, exactly what our chapter says that Shlomo does. He goes to Egypt to get horses, in contravention of the word of Hashem. Although Shlomo shares his vast wealth with the temple, dedicating many of the fine items he receives to the improvement or beautification of the sanctuary, the majority of it seems invested in his palace, his throne, and his treasuries. Fascinatingly, when the palace of the king, hall of judgment, and house of the forest of Lebanon were first constructed, we noted that there was no gold associated with them. We interpreted the absence of gold as a symbolic demonstration of the idea that the Beit HaMikdash was primary, and therefore of greater stature and significance than Shlomo's residential complex. The king serves to maintain a just and equitable society so that its citizens can serve Hashem. He is ultimately a servant of Hashem. The fact that we now see that there are innumerable golden vessels, fixtures, and decorations in the palace, on the throne of the king, and in the house of the forest of Lebanon is shocking. Why wasn't this mentioned earlier? It's possible that these adornments were added at a later time when Shlomo's wealth increased. It's also possible that they were present from the outset, but the text didn't want to mention them earlier so that it could convey a message to us. Regardless of the historical timeline, the concept is the same. Although Shlomo's intentions in constructing the royal complex were sincere and God-centered in the beginning, the purity of his motives declined over time. He began to fall prey to the allure of his own riches, power, and fame. When Shlomo started out, he saw these extravagances as a necessary evil, justified by the need to present a spectacle of majesty and power to the nations of the world. Eventually, however, building the empire became an end in itself. We see the decline beautifully chronicled in this chapter, which moves from the pinnacle of spiritual success, the visit of the Queen of Sheba, to gray areas in which the spiritual and self-aggrandizing impulses overlapped, such as the use of precious wood to adorn both the house of God and the king's residence, and then to the low of pure unadulterated materialism described in the final verses of the passage, accumulation of gold, acquisition of rare items, and the pursuit of lavish decoration for their own sake.